Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
How you doing? Welcome to the show. This week we chat with Dr. Gay Culverhouse about head injuries to NFL players and what can be done to help these former players, as well as educate parents and kids about how to protect yourself playing this sport. We also check in with our smart shopping expert, Solmez McDaddy, as well as chat with Susan Kolarik of St. Leo University on the ins and outs of online courses and if this is a good method of learning for you. We then wrap things up with an exciting remix from David Guetta and Usher on a song called Without You.
Capture your need for sound.
So many of us are fans of football, and by that I mean football, not soccer. You know, throwing around the pigskin and seeing big guys crashing into each other at the line of scrimmage as they try to move that ball downfield for a touchdown. Well, as much fun as it is to watch these massive men going at it, the sport is very violent and can cause some serious injuries, which are often overlooked. To help give us an idea of what can really happen out on the field is former president of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, author of the book Throwaway Players, The Concussion Crisis from Pee-wee Football to the NFL, and founder of Culverhouse's Players Outreach Program that helps retired NFL players. Dr. Gay Culverhouse, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. I appreciate being invited to be here.
Now, Dr. Culverhouse, I think when a lot of us, you know, watch football, we think that the players are mostly safe from serious injury, to the head because, you know, they're wearing these NFL-regulated helmets. Can you sort of give us an idea about what type of head injuries, you know, can happen and what they can lead to after the players retire and start to age?
Absolutely. Well, a couple of things you have to understand first. One is you can suffer a concussion with never having been hit. In other words, if you're in a car accident and you're hit from behind and you have a whiplash, your head, your brain goes forward and hits the front part of your head, which is your skull, and then flips backwards and hits the back part of your skull. That is enough to give you a concussion, and you never made contact with anything. So there was a player that died not too long ago by the name of Tom McHale. He played for the Buccaneers. And when they autopsied his brain, they said, although he had never suffered a documented concussion, his brain showed the ravages of essentially 20,000 car accidents.
Oh, my goodness.
So the helmet doesn't necessarily protect you from a concussion. And in fact, helmets nowhere on them claim that they protect you from a concussion. The only thing a helmet will say is that it mitigates skull fracture. But that does not mean concussion. So these players, whether they're young or old, can very easily have concussions while wearing a helmet. It's sort of like putting on a Superman cape that's nothing but a towel. It doesn't really do anything but protect you against a skull fracture, not a concussion.
And I know that, you know, football is definitely, a high-impact sport. You know, these guys are crashing into each other at full force, at full speed. Because of this level of impact, what's the average, you know, career length for a player? Because they must get banged up, obviously, you know, pretty hard. And over time, this has to decrease their abilities.
Well, if you do Newton's law of physics, you will find that if one player, and these are light players, this is more like college or high school, one player weighs, let's say, 185, one weighs 250. When they collide into each other, that force exerted on each body is over 1,500 pounds of pressure on each body. And so the joints, the muscles, the everything about the player is damaged at 1,500 pounds of force. So it's terribly frightening what's really going on in terms of the masses of men. And you and I both know that the offensive line now weighs 300 pounds. That's the average of an offensive lineman, is 300 pounds. And to answer your question, the average playing lifespan of a player is 4 years. The average lifespan of a linebacker in the NFL is 2.7 years. So these men have 2.7 years to make all the money they're going to need for the rest of their life to raise their children, send them to college, and take care of their wives.
Dr. Culverhouse, I know you obviously do love the sport because, you know, from what I understand, you were brought up in it. Your dad started off owning the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you were president of the Bucs.
Yes.
What do you want to see happen in the league? Are there things that can be done to help the players while they're still playing?
Yes, absolutely. I think, if you remember, Hines Ward gave Ben Roethlisberger a hard time when the Steelers had already made the playoffs, and the doctor and coach told Ben Roethlisberger he could not enter a game after a concussion. And Hines Ward gave Ben a very hard time in the press. I think we need to allow players to withdraw from the field with honor. If they're hurt and they cannot go back in, they shouldn't be chastised for not going back in. They should be allowed to heal. I have this saying, let's put the I back in team. Let's teach the younger generation, if they're injured, if they're seeing double, if they have ringing in their ears, if they can't stand up straight and walk a straight line, get yourself off the field and tell your mom, your coach, someone, so that you get proper treatment.
And can you tell us, Dr. Culverhouse, because I know that you have managed to get an independent neurologist at all NFL games. What was the purpose of that initiative?
The purpose of that is, prior to 2009, there was no neurologist necessary on the field. They would have a general physician, or they would have an orthopedist, most likely, but not someone who evaluated the brain. And right now, they did overturn having one at every game, but they put into effect the fact that a player has to seek an independent neurologist for a medical okay before he returns to the next game. He's not allowed to go into the same game in which he was injured, but must wait and see an independent neurologist before he returns. Because people need to rest their brains. Before, it was a very macho thing. Let me back in. It's just a ding. You know, it's no big deal. If you're not bleeding, you're not hurt. Well, people need to take it seriously and rest their brain.
Joining us on the show is Dr. Gay Culverhouse, a former president of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, author of the book Throwaway Players, and founder of Players Outreach. Check it out, playersoutreach.org. Dr. Culverhouse, can you tell us about your book and why you wrote it?
I wrote the book so that we could tell the players what benefits there are for them, so that we could warn high school students and those people wanting to play football what football is really about, that the average age you start steroids or performance enhancers is 14. I wanted them to know what it took to do that you probably wouldn't graduate from college, you probably wouldn't be prepared for a second career, and I wanted parents to understand what the ramifications of their children playing could be and take appropriate steps for the safety of their children.
And with regards to your outreach program, what is it and how does it help retired NFL players?
Yes. What we do is we help players access the benefits that the NFL has set up for the players. We go around the country talking to retired players and telling them what the NFL offers them. and then we gather the paperwork for them. We gather the medical reports necessary for them, including paying for them to fly in and have doctor's visits, etc. We also go looking for players. We find the homeless players that don't know anything about the services that are available for them. We seek them out and get them the help they need. We also have a program for the wives and moms, aunts, girlfriends, to protect them and to give them a heads up when it's time to get services for their boyfriend, son, or husband.
And why did you start this program? Because it feels like it's something that's, you know, a lot of work, obviously. And what are you getting out of it? Is it because you've seen so many of these men in so much pain, Dr. Culverhouse?
Exactly. Absolutely. I came back to Tampa a couple of years ago, looked up some of my former players, because when we started the Buccaneers, we were an expansion team. We were against all odds, and we became a very close family. We lost 26 games in a row. I mean, we didn't go in McDonald's. We went through the drive-thru. but we were very, very close. So I came back to Tampa and was looking up some of my former players, and I was distressed, absolutely horrified at their condition, both physical and mental. And not every single player, but enough players to warrant help. And I thought, they don't know what's available for them. You rarely leave a forwarding address when you're told to clear out your locker. And I thought, I've got to get help for my men. And now I call anybody that ever played in the NFL as one of my men.
That's fantastic. And can you give us some examples, Dr. Culverhouse, of, you know, players who are having a rough time? Because I feel like, you know, it's so often glossed over. You know, it's always about what's happening on the field and, you know, has someone pulled in that ball? Has someone rushed for X amount of yards? Has someone blocked, you know, someone or got to the quarterback? No one really knows about a lot of these journeyman NFL players who, again, their careers don't last very long. Can you give us some examples so that we know what it feels like?
Sure. We have more players than I can tell you, and I can't use names except for one name because we protect the identity of our players. But, for example, one of the first players I wanted to find was Jerry Eckwood. He was an outstanding running back for us, and I had been told by my players when I went back to Tampa that he was not doing well. It took me about 2 months to find him, and when we found him, he was 2 weeks from being thrown out of his assisted living facility, and he was in a halfway house because he committed a number of crimes involving drugs, and he didn't know who we were, what we were, and we'd known him forever. He was like family. He'd known us so well, but he didn't recognize us, and then he thought we were agents coming to sign him up, and he was 57, and he didn't know what town he was in, and we took him to a medical center nearby and had his mental facilities tested and told him that he qualified for assisted living from the NFL with all benefits taken care of, and we found a facility for him after we filled out the paperwork, got his birth certificate. I can't tell you everything we went through because we never knew if he would be there or if he would remember that we were coming to get him. You know, he had very little memory. We'd show up. He said, "What are you doing here? Why are you here? What's going on?" And then he would get mad at something and throw his phone. And then he called us up at midnight and said, "Please bring lots of cash. We're going to buy a car." And just not in touch with reality whatsoever.
Wow. That's such a shame. And again, so many of this, you know, so many of these cases are happening around the league. And I know that you made your way to Congress to testify on behalf of players. What were you trying to accomplish with this?
Well, as one of the players told me that morning, he called the hotel room and he said, "Gay, make them hear us. You've got the ability to speak and have them hear about us." Because it's difficult for a player, a journeyman, if you will, I call him the blue-collar worker, to get the ear of Congress, to get the ear of the NFL, to get the ear of anyone who can make decisions and change the world for these men. They want youngsters to know that they need to stay in college and have a second career. They need to have life after football. They need to study and make grades. And they realize this now on the flip side when they can't get another job, when they're too banged up or they never really got another degree and it's too late for them. And so I had a number of players tell me, you be our voice, speak for us, and get the word out. Because the honest truth is the fans have a very short memory. You ask someone who was the quarterback for the Chargers 10 years ago, you're going to have a hard time finding people that have an answer. And you're just as famous for that 15 minutes as anyone else. And once you're retired, you're gone. Your history, and particularly if you don't play a position that's the glory position like the quarterback.
And that's completely true, because I know I was just trying to think, like, I'm a big NFL fan and I'm trying to think who was the quarterback 10 years ago for the Chargers. So I think that's very important what you're doing. And something else that I wanted to ask you is, you know, we spoke a little bit about the resources that are available for these retired NFL players, but are there adequate resources, Gay, in the fact that, you know, if this NFL player, whatever position he played, is finding himself with increasing health issues as he ages, what does he do to get involved and get some help?
Well, there are two things a player can do. The easiest thing to do is to go on our website and contact us, or pick up the phone and contact us, because we can tell you everything that's available for you without you having to go through the league. You can go to the league website and find it, but it's simpler to come to us and let us explain it to you. We don't charge any money. We're a total nonprofit, and we can set you up with the correct paperwork for the correct program that you qualify for. And the NFL offers a number of programs. They do heart screening. They do prostate screening. They do second career counseling. They do financial counseling. They have assisted living programs. They have mental health programs. They have amazing programs, but most people look at it and get a little overwhelmed by the paperwork, or, you know, they might want to see your IRS form, or they may want your birth certificate. And people just go, birth certificate? I don't even know how to find it. Well, we know how to get your birth certificate for you really quickly. So, you know, we're a good resource for all the players.
Excellent. And I have to ask you, what do you tell a parent who has a child in football? Should they still play? Are there steps to teach them to protect themselves? Because, I mean, I don't think the sport is going anywhere.
No, I love football. My grandson plays football, and he loves it. The only thing I try to warn parents is, number one, there is no regulatory agency overlooking helmets. Helmets don't protect against concussions, and parents need to know that. They need to make sure the helmet fits on the child's head to protect the head from breaking. But if the child says, I'm dizzy, I'm nauseous, I'm seeing double, they need to pull the child out and take them to the doctor, or at least, at the very least, have them rest 1 week. And that means no TV, no visual stimulation, no auditory stimulation, a complete rest of the brain.
You know, I'm sure there's so much more of this information, important information in your book. Dr. Culverhouse, where can people get a copy of this book?
The book can be purchased through our website or through Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. It's on iTunes. It's an e-book, a Nook book. You can't miss this book if you try it. If you Google it, you'll find it. It's very available.
Excellent. Dr. Culverhouse, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I think it's been really important to share this information. Thank you.
Well, Kelly, I appreciate your time.
Excellent. That is Dr. Gay Culverhouse, again, former president of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, author of the book Throwaway Players, and again, founder of Players Outreach. Check her out, www.playersoutreach.org.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
A lot of us like to shop, but it can be quite the adventure when we hit the stores, whether it's online or in person. You want to make sure you're not just out there willy-nilly buying everything, but being a smart shopper. Someone who knows her stuff about finding the best deals out there is Solmaz McDaddy of My Sweet Deals, mysweetdeals.ca. Solmaz, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly.
Solmaz, now, as we know here on the program, because you've been on numerous times in the past, you are, and I say this freely, you're an expert, I feel, on finding good deals and being a smart shopper. Now, at this time of the year, as we're sort of embarking into autumn, what should we be focusing on as Columbus Day in the U.S. and Canadian Thanksgiving are, you know, just around the corner?
Well, you know, fall is just starting, and at least here in Montreal. So it's getting a little chilly. Everything's full price right now. But what you want to do is hold off until Thanksgiving, Canadian Thanksgiving Day weekend and Columbus Day weekend in the States to spend all your money, pretty much. If you've got any purchases to make, if you've got, if you want a new wardrobe, just hold off 3 weeks. That's the weekend of October 7th to the 10th. If you happen to be in the States, I know I'll be in New York that weekend, and I plan on getting a fall/winter wardrobe at sale prices. So that's something to keep in mind, because a lot of people are going crazy buying boots right now. But if you can hold off just a bit, that's the time to do it, October 7th to the 10th.
And I know we're still a few months away from Christmas, but it is approaching fast. And, you know, is it too early to be looking for presents for your loved one, or is now a good time to at least, you know, get your eyes open?
Absolutely. That's a really good point, Kelly, because I always have my eyes open for loved ones, because you never know when you'll find that great deal. And you know what? Whether you buy it in a rush during the month of December when you really don't have the time, or if you're buying it now in September, October, November, whenever you see that, whether it's that special wine opener or really, really nice piece of clothing, or perhaps you're seeing skis that are half off right now because they're last year's stock and they want to bring in the new stock. Now's the time to look out for those items for your Christmas shopping.
You know, I've been hearing a lot about this group buying sites. Can you explain, you know, what they are and how they can benefit us?
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of group buying sites. You know, there are aggregators out there where you're able to get one email with all the different group buying sites, because we all know we don't have the time to go through 10, 15, 20 emails a day with the deal of the day. Here in Canada, we've got onespout.com that you can register, and every day it takes not even less than 60 seconds of my day where I go through the different deals of the day with different group buying sites. And if there's something that catches my attention, I click through and I can buy it right there. And what I find, I'm a huge fan of it because you really do save a lot of money. So when I see there's a restaurant nearby my house that has a 50% off deal, you pay, say, for example, $20, you get $40 worth. Why not buy it? I know that I'll be going there. Usually the coupon is valid 3 to 6 months. I'll likely turn up at that restaurant. It's not out of my way. So you have to be really smart about that. You don't want to just buy any coupon that you think, if you're, you know, like trek an hour out of your way to go to that restaurant or to that clothing store, that's not a good deal. And you don't want to be buying too many, because then you'll just be spending probably more money than you would had you spent the full rate. The other thing you want to look at are the fine print, because oftentimes these coupons will say, you know, maximum one per table, or maximum one per person, up to a maximum of, say, two per table. And that's important, because if I'm buying a coupon that I pay $15 for $30 worth, but I'm only allowed one coupon, that's a $15 saving. So it could be good. It could potentially be good. But if it's an expensive restaurant and I wouldn't have gone there in the first place, it might not be that good of a deal. So just make sure that you're buying something that hopefully you would have ended up using in the end, and you're really saving money. You're not just going out and spending on all these coupons that group buying coupons, if you will. They're kind of the modern coupon, the e-coupons, and just spending your money and not using them, and then that's a waste.
Now, a question that I would have for you about these group buying sites, Solmaz, because I've never even heard of them. So thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. So I'm assuming then, like you said, because you just mentioned, you know, you and I are both located here in Montreal. So if you were, you said, I think it was onespout.ca.
OneSpout. It's onespout.com.
Okay, .com. And then with regards to that then, so if we're here in Montreal, so is it by location then that you can find the stuff that pertains to you?
Yes, exactly. I could mention which city I want to subscribe to. So I can subscribe to many cities. I might have a sibling that lives in Ottawa or Toronto, or I might have a friend in Vancouver, and I could just subscribe to every city that I want, and it still comes in as one email.
Oh, that's fantastic. So it really does keep everything organized for you. So, for example, you know, because I know for a while your boyfriend was living in Toronto, so it probably benefited you to have both Montreal and Toronto happening.
Well, that's right. So I'd have Montreal and Toronto, and every morning I would just check, and it's really, I mean, not even a minute's worth, you know. I know that I won't go through every single, I'm not going to subscribe to every group buying site and then go through every single email, because you're talking a minimum of 10, 15, 20 group buying sites out there. So I don't have the time for that. If I'm going to try and save money, I'm not going to spend my time looking how to save money, because that could be like 10, 20 minutes. But this is like not even a minute. You get it done, you check, and then guess what? I had a friend that wanted to do laser hair removal. We all know that's really expensive. You're talking about $200. She wanted to do like, I forget what, but anyways, she had had a consultation. It was about $200 for her consultation. She found a deal for $300 unlimited for 1 year. So that was a pretty good deal. And I've seen those kind of deals come back. And she's really happy. It's a good place and it's a reputable location, laser hair removal clinic. And so you really can find amazing deals. You just want to make sure, you want to think twice about it. Am I going to use this? Is it something that I'm just throwing my money at and that I won't use in the end, or I won't enjoy, or will I actually enjoy it? And I found that 95% of the times they're great deals, and at the end of the day, it's a great deal for the consumer and the vendor, because it brings you into a location that you might have not otherwise checked out. And if you enjoy your experience, well, chances are you'll go back.
Joining us on the show right now is smart shopper Solmaz McDaddy of My Sweet Deals, again, mysweetdeals.ca. So, Maz, what's going on in the cosmetics industry right now? Are there any deals out there happening for our lady listeners?
Well, you know what? I love how MAC, it really believes in the environment. And so they encourage you to bring back 6 empty products at any other location. You can even do it online, and you'll get a free lipstick. So that way you're not throwing out your empty containers, and that's MAC Cosmetics. And so you bring out those containers to the store. I've been doing this for years, and this program has been ongoing for, oh God, I don't know how many years, but I've been doing it for at least 10 years, and it's just fantastic. And you get a free lipstick for just making sure you don't throw them out.
And another thing is, too, right?
It's really great. And you know, I like to shop. You often have this in the bigger retail stores where they'll have a promotion when you buy, for example, $35 worth, we'll give you $99 worth of products. And I love to buy that way because I haven't had to buy mascara in God knows how long.
Wow.
Because you end up just, you know, you buy $35 worth of a product that you need, not just, again, buying to buy. You actually need a product. And then you get these little packages with, like, the makeup case. And it's often really worth it. You just make sure that those are products that you would otherwise need. For example, some people don't wear lipstick. And if the package contains 3 lipsticks, that might not be the deal for you. But these happen all the time. If you go into a big retail shop, I strongly recommend shopping that way, really maximizing every dollar that you put in, making sure you need it, but also getting the most of it back.
The other day I was out shopping, and I got offered a store card that, from what I understood, because I just was sort of looking at it briefly, that it involved, you know, a point system for, again, obtaining products in the long run, like bigger products, whatever. Solmaz, are store cards something that we should really get involved with? Do they really help and bring down your costs overall if it's a store you frequent?
Absolutely. Loyalty cards are so worth it. You don't want to subscribe to every single loyalty card there is out there, because you might need more than one wallet.
Yes.
but stores that you frequently visit is definitely worth it to go with the card. I know that here in Canada, we've got Shoppers Drug Mart, in Quebec, Pharmaprix. I have the Optimum card, and I couldn't tell you how many times, Optimum card being their loyalty rewards card, I've gotten so much worth. And I make sure whenever I buy, to buy on sale. That way I get the maximum. My dollar really goes really far. So it's not buying something full priced and then getting something to compensate.
Right.
It's everything on sale, and then I get the reward points. And I would say, I mean, maybe once a year I get to go on a shopping spree of $100. Like, it's really worth it.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah, that's having always spent on sale even, you know, so.
Okay, so it is something to, if it's a store that you frequent, you should be paying attention to this and seeing if it's something that in the end is going to work out for you in the long run.
Exactly.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I have to ask you, what is your advice, you know, regarding online shopping? Is this, you know, a good way to shop for deals or check up on stores to make sure they're giving you accurate information? Because I know, like, online shopping continues to evolve as the months and years roll through.
Yeah, you know what, Kelly? That's really important to do your homework before you go out and buy something. For example, if you're shopping around for a TV, well, you know which stores carry the TV, so why get in your car and go from store to store to store to store? Go online, check out the deals, see what's available, because we're able to do it now. So see which store is offering which TV at which price, and that's an example. But I recommend to do that with anything, any, especially bigger ticket items, you know, that's always worthwhile. And then you know you're getting the best deal. And then when you get to the store, you know that that's the lowest price that's being offered on the market. But what's stopping you from negotiating and getting even the best price on the market, you know? So that is strongly recommended, to really use the internet as a tool to shop around, make sure you're always getting the best price.
Finally, what is your biggest piece of advice as we march towards the holiday buying season? Because again, I know we're, you know, it's coming fast, Solmez.
It is. It always comes by so quickly. I would say make a list. Make a list of all the people you want to shop for. See what you're looking for them, and then keep your eyes open as to the deals that are out there.
Okay.
And that way you know that you'll get the best price for every person, and you'll know that the gifts that you're buying are really gifts that they want and that they'll cherish. It won't be just like buying to buy and like quickly rushing out there 2 days before and paying full price. You're really going to get the best deal, best bang for your buck.
Fantastic. And Solmez, I know you and I have talked already, and you're going to come back on the show, I guess, right as we're sort of in the cusp of that holiday buying season, you know, just so people get a good idea as to what's out there and maybe how to stay organized. Because I know that you and I have talked about this in the past, that it's very important to stay organized as you head out for those holiday shopping sprees.
Yes.
Excellent. Solmez, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kelly.
That smart shopper, Solmez McDaddy of My Sweet Deals. Again, check her out, mysweetdeals.ca. Thanks again for joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you.
Somebody kiss me. material world.
Season when a lot of people get the itch to examine their lives and their vocations and maybe consider going back to school. Perhaps you're stuck in a job you don't want, or you just want to expand your knowledge base. Whatever the reasons may be, a lot of us turn to the idea of taking an online course because we think that's the best option available, especially if we're working full-time. To give us an idea if an online course is really the way to go, please welcome Susan Kolarik, Assistant Vice President of Instructional Technology at St. Leo University in Florida. Susan, thank you for joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show.
You're welcome, Kelly. I'm glad to be here.
Susan, I think a lot of people believe that online courses are easier than traditional college courses. Is this actually true?
Attaining a degree, whether it's an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree, is a major life commitment, and people need to think about that carefully, whether you're studying online or in a classroom. Some of the reasons students choose to take classes online is because of the ability to participate at different times or eliminating commuting. But the time commitment is going to be the same. So you want to think about the time that you're going to spend studying as well as the class time interacting online. All of the assessments and objectives for the course will be the same as if you were in the classroom. You just don't need to commute to go do it.
And how much time, Susan, should a person budget per week for an online course?
When you go to a classroom 3 to 6 hours per week, those are two separate things, but they're going to be meshed together with your studying time online. Usually an online program is an accelerated program, so you're doing the same amount of work but in a shorter amount of time, and that's definitely one thing to consider. For instance, if you're taking an 8-week class worth 3 credits, the in-class interactions online may take 6 hours, but the studying time will take another 6 to 9 hours. So you want to make sure you can make the commitment for both the online interaction part as well as the studying part.
Now, if we take into account the amount of hours that you've just given out, if a person is working full-time or even sort of significantly part-time, should that person only be doing one online course per semester? You know, because it sounds like maybe multiple courses would be hard to handle.
That's definitely a good suggestion, particularly the first term. You want to make sure that you're ready for that commitment and that you can fit it into both your work schedule and your personal schedule at the same time. So we do usually suggest starting with one.
And can you give us an idea of what types of assignments students are given online? Because I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, that they have to participate in online forums and discussions.
That's a good point. There are several different ways for students to interact online. Some programs may actually require a synchronous element. So you would have to log in for a particular day and time during the week, and that's definitely something to check with to make sure it fits your schedule. Other than that, you're going to have reading assignments, usually out of a standard textbook. You're going to have an opportunity to interact, as you mentioned, through discussion forums so that students can have an opportunity to both show what they think about the material and hear what others think. You're going to have written assignments. You may actually have oral assignments where you will record yourself speaking and then submit that as part of the assignment. And, of course, there may be tests involved as well.
And something I think that people don't realize when they take an online course, because I was just sort of thinking about my experience in university. You know, I was obviously at a university, you know, attending class. And I know that depending on what class you're in, if you don't feel particularly confident in that subject or whatever, you can hide in the class unless you have a teacher that has an eagle eye. But you can't hide in an online course. Like, the teacher's going to want to hear your point of view.
You're correct. You can't hide in an online class. So some students actually report that it's more work because of that. Every student will have to answer those discussion questions and participate in the discussion, whereas, as you mentioned, you can often hide in a large university class. The other benefit of that, though, is you get that personal attention. It's so easy for an instructor to be able to evaluate just what a student understands or is struggling with and be able to provide that personal instruction that you may not have that opportunity to in a large classroom.
Joining us on the show is Susan Kolarik, Assistant Vice President of Instructional Technology at St. Leo University in Florida. Susan, what happens if you're taking an online course that requires you showing, I guess for lack of a better term, physical evidence of you actually completing an assignment that, you know, is not paperwork involved. And I guess, for example, if you were maybe taking like a CSI type of course that requires you to do field work, does that mean that you have to post video footage of your assignment?
That may actually be a requirement. For instance, we have a class that teaches interviewing skills. And you would actually do practice interviews that you would record using a microphone into your computer. Or we may ask that you attend a particular meeting in the community. For instance, if it's a community relations class, you might have to go and provide notes from those meetings. So we do a lot of activities that put you out into active learning, and then it's just the submission of them that might be slightly different from what you would normally do in a classroom.
By reading up on some of your, experience in this online course world, Susan, it sounds like obviously you've been involved in it for a while. In the last little while, do you think that technology has gotten better to help students accomplish their tasks? Like, I'm just wondering if, you know, for example, an iPad actually helps a student, or is it still, you know, just a traditional computer that's, you know, what you need to use?
Usually, you know, you want a traditional computer. Laptops and netbooks are excellent for it, particularly if you have a traveling schedule. That way you always have your materials with you. Some of the notepad products do not run all of the software yet, although they're making great strides. And one thing you'll want to do is just make sure you have that excellent internet connection, because nothing will be more frustrating than a slow connection when you're trying to do your coursework.
Should both the students and online teachers have ground rules set before the course begins? Like, meaning, you know, should assignments always be handed in, for example, on Fridays, and then your mark will be available on the following Monday? Because it just feels like things could get willy-nilly.
Exactly. And faculty are really cognizant of that. We make sure at our university, and many universities do this, that assignments are always due on the same day. That way students get comfortable with the schedule and are able to plan their time a little bit better. Faculty are also trained in how to help students learn about those time management skills, and your students will often go through an orientation at the beginning to begin that process of learning how to manage their time.
Susan, do you feel that there is enough support available for students that are doing an online course, and are teachers, you know, readily accessible? Because I guess, you know, I was fortunate enough to do all of my courses, I think, at a university. So I feel fortunate that I was able to do that. And I think maybe now I would like to try maybe an online course. But I guess maybe because I'm old school, if you want to call it that, like, it frightens me a little to not know that I can't see a teacher face to face necessarily.
There are so many different communication tools that we use now with the online classes. You can actually have face-to-face time during an office hour, just as you would if you were at a university location, because we use webinar software that helps you to do that. So if you had a webinar camera, you could actually connect and see your faculty member during office hours. If you didn't have a camera, and they're so inexpensive now, most people do, you could also do it just through audio or through a text chat session. And, of course, email makes people available much more readily nowadays, and that helps a lot. Some of the benefits that the technology has provided, particularly to the online environment, is that students can go back and review material. So if there's an audio example that you want to look at, you might see it once in a university classroom, but you can view it multiple times when it's in the online environment until you really understand the material.
And what are the biggest hurdles for an online student? Is it being organized and budgeting the time for the class? Because I'm just assuming that that's probably a big reason that they need to, you know, that could be a reason to fail, I suppose.
You're exactly right. And making sure that you have good time management skills and setting a schedule for yourself is really important, particularly in the beginning. When you have a class that you have to go to every Tuesday at 11 a.m., you get used to that. And you want to set your own schedule like that for your online class. For instance, maybe Thursday night at 8 p.m. is the best time for you to study every week, and you make sure that you do that.
Are there types of individuals, Susan, who are better suited to taking an online class, or can anyone really do it if provided they find their focus?
Absolutely anyone can do it. We have students of every age group who are logging in and attaining their degrees. We have students who have taken completely online classes, maybe in their second or third career, and they're just looking for further enrichment, and they log in online and come to campus, and that's the first time we ever see them, but we feel that we know them so well because we've interacted with them over the years that they're working on their degrees.
Can you give us an idea, I guess, of the main benefits then of taking an online course? Because I know I've sort of asked you or we focus a little bit on the difficulties that it might be to pursue this. But obviously, a lot of people do this and succeed.
Exactly. You want to make sure that you have an opportunity to really explore the time commitment, and we talked about that a great deal. But you want to be able to think about a wider range of program offerings as well. For instance, your job or your family might have you in a particular location, but you can take a degree program from a completely different state or even another country in order to participate in that particular program. And another idea is you get to an opportunity to participate with students from all over the country or from other countries. And that adds a richness to the experience that you don't always have in the classroom.
And with regards to price and cost, Susan, you know, is this a more affordable way of taking, you know, these classes to get your degree?
That's going to vary depending on the program and the university that you're looking at. So you want to ask a lot of questions about that. Check and make sure there aren't additional technology fees. Check and make sure that tuition is all-inclusive, or if there are additional items that you would have to pay for. Textbooks, of course, are a separate issue and may run into some additional costs, so you want to take a look at those as well. Each program is going to be a little bit different, and each program is priced a little different. I think in the beginning, we thought this is a real cost savings for students and universities, but there's so much that goes into it to make a meaningful experience for students that it usually comes out to about the same price.
Do most universities now have online courses and online programs so that you can obtain your degree? Let's say, again, as you mentioned, you know, if someone's in New York and they decide that they want to take, you know, a program at UCLA.
Schools that have adopted online have really always had as their mission reaching out to a particular audience. And so those are the ones who are at the forefront of the online environment. If your university that you're interested in is primarily a small one and it's campus-based, they may not have that program, but I'm sure they'll be able to find that program at another institution as well.
And what suggestions do you give to people who are really thinking about this, Susan? Because, again, like, I could feel that it might be a bit overwhelming for someone. Like, it might be, you know, in their plans that this is something that they want to do, but it might just seem overwhelming to start. So where does a person start and sort of forge ahead?
I think that's a great comment. The main thing is to have confidence and give it a try. It really doesn't hurt to go out and try a class. And really take a look and see what it's like. It may not be as intimidating as you think. For instance, at St. Leo University, we have an online class, and you can connect to it and just take a look. See what the assignments would be like, gauge the time commitment, and see if you would like that online environment before you jump in. But really, just give it a try. Have confidence in yourself that this can be a game changer for your future.
And are there places that people can go to start, you know, finding this information, or do they just sort of have to, you know, get on Google and start, you know, putting in their interests, and maybe they already have a few universities in their mind that they would like to attend? Is that how they should do it? Or is there like a one source stop where, you know, you can start to sort of find out information about this?
Unfortunately, there isn't a one stop to get a lot of information. I would start with organizations that you know are dedicated to the topic that you want to study and begin there. And think about the universities that have the same topic and move with that as well. If you just Google something, you may end up with some schools that, you know, may not have the reputation that you're looking for. So begin with those that you already know about.
And then just to sort of wrap things up, Susan, if someone, you know, let's say does want to obtain that law degree, so it is definitely viable to do that online, and depending on how, you know, how many courses they can take, you know, per semester, this is something potentially that they could do in 5 years or less.
Yes, depending on the degree program, which range from master's to doctorates, the time commitment will vary, but it does depend on what the student's ready to commit to.
Excellent. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be with you.
That's Susan Kolarik, Assistant Vice President of Instructional Technology at St. Leo University in Florida.
Bring on the remix. We'll be right back.
That's David Guetta and Usher singing Without You, remixed by Nicky Romero on The Kelly Alexander Show. We also featured the one and only Madonna from 1985 with her hit song, Material Girl. Well, a big thank you going out to our fabulous guests this week, including Dr. Gay Culverhouse, Solmaz McDaddy, as well as Susan Kolarik of St. Leo University in Florida. And as per usual, I want to leave you with your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from James D. Miles. You can easily judge the character of a man by how he treats those who can do nothing for him. There you go. Thanks again for listening to the show. I always appreciate your time. Any comments or questions, as per usual, send them to me, Kelly, at kellyalexandershow.com. Have a great week. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Pare, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.